first hit in professional baseball, which is always memorable. And it turned out to be one of the 107 hits that I had that first season, which set a record for the New York Penn League.
Hey, hey, listeners. Welcome to Shop Talk, the podcast that's as thrilling as a bottom-of-the-nine, bases-loaded home run. I'm here to tell you we're blurring the lines between the badge and the community, bringing you stories and insights that'll knock your socks off. Leading the charge, we've got the ever-charismatic, the man with the plan, Chief Jeff Walther. And right by his side, the best darn PIO in the game, Sergeant Allison Sempsis. Buckle up, folks, because we're about to take you on a wild ride into the heart of service and dedication. It's going to be a beautiful day for a podcast, so let's get started.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the 30th, Allison. No way.
Yes.
30th.
It's exciting.
30th episode of Shop Talk. I'm mostly your host. Otherwise, Allison really runs the whole thing, so I'm just your part-time host, Chief Jeff Walther, the Scottsdale Police Department. And yeah, it's our 30th episode. Pretty exciting. But right away, it doesn't matter. Like, 30th episode should have been last month in February. To our great listeners out there, you have my apologies. February was a pretty crazy month for the Scottsdale Police Department. Beginning of the month kicked off with the greatest show on grass, the People's Open.
It was a fun one.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely a fun one. It was good. Let's talk about that, Allison. Because what's interesting is that we've gotten there was a lot of press after the Saturday, right? We got a lot of press because of the size of the crowd, we wound up having to shut down the entrance for a period of time and shut down general admission alcohol sales at a couple locations, really to filter this massive, massive crowd in there. And then with all the rain on Wednesday and Thursday, shutting down play almost entirely, mm-hmm. I think we had a lot of general admission tickets used on Saturday that normally would have been hit on Wednesday and Thursday. And so we had a real bottleneck, largely because of the weather.
The weather.
The weather really made a mess of the course, and a lot of the walking areas that are non-paved or non-walking path areas that you could walk on the course, the berms and things like that, were really too wet, too soggy, too muddy. Yeah, thanks to everybody for making their own mud slides. And I don't mean the drink at the Open. And so we wound up having more arrests than normal, more ejections and more trespasses than normal. But I'll be honest with you. I know you and I talked about this in the office when I can get a word in edgewise with you. And one of the things we talked about was kind of all the hype about it, right? Like, yeah. People are like, oh my gosh, the behavior.
They're trying to make a story there.
And we had got so many public records requests and requests for interviews about the behavior. And the question that really has fallen to us, the Thunderbirds, the PGA, WM or Waste Management, police and fire is like, what are you going to do? People were misbehaved. Folks, I'm here to tell you, we have an entire 30 years of a golf game, a golf tournament that has been largely built on the People's Open, this idea of having a great time and coming out and having a great party and a great experience. And the alcohol is flowing in a very safe environment. And people on occasion have gotten to, does nobody remember the 19th hole from last year? The guy in the underwear with the sign that said 19th hole, pointing to his nether regions, right? But all of a sudden, everybody's misbehaved. Yeah. And can you believe this? And what are you going to do for next year? Well, we'll look at, obviously, very tongue in cheek, but we had another amazing, amazingly successful Open where, the injuries were minor. The arrests were up a little bit, some poor behavior was up, which I'd love to talk to, as many people who will listen, is that I love how instantaneously it was, what are you going to do? What's the PD going to do? What's the fire going to do? What's WM? What are the Thunderbirds going to do? What's the PGA going to do? Well, how about this? How about you put the accountability where the accountability lies, and that is, hey, if you're coming out to the Open next year, have a wonderful time, but please do everything in your power to behave.
Have fun.
Respectably, and treat other people civilly. I will tell you that Commander Chris Coffey, who's the Bird's Nest commander for Scottsdale PD, He had a great discussion about the number of dudes my age and his age. He and I'm in my earlier 50s than he is, but we had a conversation about like guys our age brawling in the middle of the dance floor at the Bird's Nest.
It was
crazy
to see that.
And you know, when you confront them, they're like, well, man, you know, somebody pushed my client. Well, maybe you shouldn't be throwing haymakers in the middle of the Bird's Nest. Go have a drink and have a good time. So, yes, if you notice a slight, you know, I'm having fun with it, a slight edge to my voice, that's on purpose. And that is like, come on, folks. That's how the tournament has been built. It's an amazing tournament with everybody having a great time and record crowds and typically beautiful weather. And so we had a couple days this year that were some of the worst weather that I've seen in the 30 years since I started with the Scottsdale Police Department and been out at the Open. And so it's still a terrific, terrific event.
Yeah.
By and large, if you think that because we made some more ejections this year, more trespasses, or we arrested people for more misdemeanor crimes of disorderly conduct or misdemeanor assaults and things like that for getting a little out of control, pretty minor. When you have about a million people,
yeah,
you know, who spend time at the Open, another great, great job by my folks in the Scottsdale Police Department, Scottsdale Fire, all of our partners from around the valley, other police departments, our federal partners, the city of Scottsdale, and all the, and everything we do in the technology and our GIS folks, just amazing, amazing work. So kudos to all of you for another great, great, great Open. A little bit more misbehavior than typical, but the same amount of misbehavior, or the same misbehavior. Maybe it was a little bit more, but the same misbehavior we see every year, just a little bit more on that Saturday. And so we'll make some adjustments with our partners to look into that and see what we can do. But for those of you who go out and have friends that go out and spend time there, it's just a great reminder to treat each other well and have a great time. There's a lot of great food, a lot of great drink, a lot of great atmosphere, a lot of great people. You go out on the Pro-Am day, some amazing people that you get to see. The tournament itself, some amazing golfers. I mean, what a great event. Anyway, it's a great event. And so we could continue to talk about the media silliness surrounding the Open, but it was a terrific event. And I know the Chiefs getting awful flippant about, wow, this is, you know, we should take this seriously. Well, we take it all seriously every year. We've been doing it a long time, and I'm going to go out on a limb and tell you that Scottsdale PD and the men and women of Scottsdale Police Department and Scottsdale Fire are the absolute best in the business when it comes to managing major crowds at major special events, and they did so again this year. We did so again this year, and kudos to my folks for doing a great job. So let's get into another sport.
Dun, dun, dun.
The massive town hall where we had 1,200 people in attendance in person and 1,800 people online, more than 3,000 people talking about the Dinnertime Burglary Series. Yeah, we know. We had a town hall meeting at dinner time.
I never imagined that many people would show up.
We had a town hall. We know it wasn't lost on us and the Scottsdale Police Department. We're not a bunch of dullards. We recognized that we had to talk about the Dinnertime Burglary Series. We had that at dinner time, and we pulled 1,200 people away from their homes at dinner time. We were very fortunate.
They did.
1,800 people streamed it online, and we fortunately, thank goodness, we had no burglaries during dinner time at that during that town hall. But my thanks to the amazing citizens of the Scottsdale Police Department, residents, business owners, visitors, part-time folks who came out to that amazing 2 hours that we spent with our community, really going over in detail what was going on there. And then right about 2 weeks later, again, my amazing folks made three arrests that really confirmed all the intelligence that we talked about at the town hall that we've been putting out in the media about Chilean nationals coming to the United States on the visa waiver program and committing burglaries, because we arrested three Chilean nationals for burglaries in North Scottsdale. And so that the fight is not over for us. We're going to continue monitoring all of our technology platforms, communicating with our partners, and you know, kudos to our crime prevention folks who are out there tirelessly doing residential security surveys and connecting with the community. In fact, one of our guests, former baseball phenom Rob Katzeroff, will be with us, who's also who's a crime prevention officer in the Foothills District, and spending pretty much the entirety of his day dealing with this. And so Wow, what a month. Crazy month, yeah. Right? Crazy month. Hence, we did not get our podcast in. It was scheduled, and my calendar is just completely a mess. And so I had to move some things around, and that, yeah.
How dare that you one, be busy,
I
Chief.
I know. That one fell by the wayside. So my apologies to our great listeners who missed a month. So
as we continue our special spring training wrap-up here on Shop Talk, we're thrilled to introduce two remarkable individuals who've made the leap from the baseball field to serving and protecting the community with the Scottsdale Police. First up, hailing from Germantown, Maryland, he's a former UNC Greensboro Spartan who traded his baseball cap for a police helmet. After impressing on the mound with the Oakland Athletics, boasting 84 strikeouts in just over 78 innings as a formidable setup and closing pitcher, he's now taking his talents to the streets of Scottsdale as a dedicated member of the Downtown District Bike Unit. Please give a warm welcome to Dom Vishwani. And stepping up to the plate alongside Dom, we have a guest who's journeyed from the sunny shores of Seal Beach, California, to the heart of our community here in Scottsdale. A UCLA Bruin who found love and a lifetime of stories in the game of baseball, he spent 6.5 seasons showing the minor leagues what a .300 batting average looks like before dedicating his life to crime prevention with the Scottsdale PD. Currently serving as the Foothills District Crime Prevention Officer, let's welcome Rob Katzroff. Together, they bring a unique blend of dedication, athleticism, and service to our show today. Let's dive into their stories.
Without further ado, I want to get into spring training. And last year, we love putting the focus on some of our folks and internal to the organization because we get a lot of former baseball players from all levels in the professional and professional baseball come to get into policing. It's just, I don't know.
It's pretty awesome.
It's like we're a team sport. Policing's a team sport. Mm-hmm. And so we get a lot of folks who are great athletes, whether it be baseball or football or hockey or mine and your favorite sport, softball.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like one time we'll go into Allison's exploits as a college softball pitcher. And I don't remember it. It's like Podunk, South Dakota or some North Dakota, someplace like that. But it was amazing.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure she still holds a whole bunch of records.
No big deal.
Like keg stand, longest keg stand.
Longest beer throw, probably.
Seriously, Allison still does hold some pitching records from her college, Wayward Pines University. So we could get into that later. But Rob Katzeroff and Dom Vishwani are here, both police officers in Scottsdale and both former baseball players. And guys, thanks for being here and sitting through that rather long and tedious monologue. I try to keep Allison's comments to a minimum. She went a little long this time, which is typically the case. But
talk a lot.
I'm going to sit back and she's going to take over now. Yep. Just do her thing. But guys, welcome. Thanks for being here. I know like you didn't have a choice because, it's kind of unrighteous dominion, the 4 stars I have on my collar. And so I can call and say, hey, get Dom and Rob here quick. We're going to do a baseball discussion with spring training here. And our favorite spring training team in Scottsdale is the San Francisco Giants. And it's been a good spring training so far, right? And by good, I mean we haven't had any problems, knock on wood.
You
so,
just jinxed it, yeah. Chief.
My bad. Rob?
Thank you for having me.
He's like, I don't want to be here now.
Dom's like, when do I talk? When do I say something? So I'm going to sit back and, Rob, you know what? You're the elder statesman of the two of you former baseball players here, and you can kind of give us a little bit about yourself and why I have drug you in to this completely black room here.
It's weird.
It's gotten weird. But a little bit about baseball, a little bit about yourself, a little bit about Scottsdale PD. We'll intersperse some questions, and Dom can kind of see take your lead, and then he'll just follow right up. And honestly, I joke around a lot. It's pretty awesome. You both of you have great stories. We had Officer Tom Houck on last year. Great stories as well as about his baseball career. And so we're excited to have you both on and kind of learn from you and see what, you know, kind of what that side looks like. So all you, Rob.
But I got drafted by the Montreal Expos in 1990 in the 14th round after being a senior at UCLA. So I didn't have a whole lot of bargaining power, kind of like right now being in this podcast.
And outstanding.
That was a good one.
I had a $1,000 signing bonus to go and play, and I was pumped because that was more money than I'd made in any college job that I had.
Today you'd be able to buy like 3 foot-longs at Subway for that.
But in all honesty, did you even care about the money? Like, you were just excited to...
No, I was excited to play because I knew there was the potential that you could make a lot of money.
Right.
And back in that day, obviously, it's not like the money Shohtani is making with, $790 million. Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah, that crazy. That wasn't going around in my day.
It's like Dom Vishwani money.
Yeah.
It's just the name.
If I had Dom's name and size, boy, that would have been great. But, I got drafted in 1990 by the Expos in the 14th round, and... as a college senior, they sing you to a short season A ball at that time because, you know, the draft happens in May or June. And so right away the players are going in June. And so UCLA, they ended school about the middle of June. So I joined the team and I was, you know, got there day before the season's going to start. And here I am with a bunch of new people. And I don't know if the camera doesn't do it justice, but when you look at me, I'm not the most intimidating guy around.
You are.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
He has such a friendly demeanor, yeah. too. Like, yeah.
But yeah, all 5'8 of me was in that uniform. That's probably too big for me anyways. And, you know, we start the season, and I'm not a starter, but I got in the first game, and I can remember it well because, you know, it's an extra inning game, and they pinch it. They put me in to pinch it and possibly win the game. I didn't at that point, but I did.
I had the chance to win the game. I mean, I didn't, but I was offered the opportunity.
I wanted to, but you know, the game ended up going like 16 innings. Sorry.
Oh my gosh.
And I had 3 at bats, and I finally got my very first hit in professional baseball, which is always memorable. And it turned out to be one of the 107 hits that I had that first season. Which set a record for the New York Penn League, which I think still stands.
That is awesome.
You're like Allison, except in the pros. Yeah. Yes. Still has a record somewhere.
I'm going to have to pitch to you, that means.
Oh, here we go.
It's a completely,
let's not get
completely
crazy.
Different softball versus baseball. I don't know if that I could hit a softball pitch.
Anyways.
Yeah. But that was the start of my career. I had a fantastic rookie year and ended up getting named as the most valuable player of the New York Penn League that year.
Oh, my gosh.
That's awesome.
And finally, they kind of knew who I was at that point. So from a 14th round draft pick, the following season, they actually moved me straight up to Double A, which is not typically likely. You usually go through each of the levels unless you're one of those big prospects who's drafted in the first round.
Yeah.
So I ended up playing in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania the next year in 91. And, you know, it was a 142-game season. I played every single one of them, even the game that we took a 8-hour road trip to New Britain from Harrisburg, and I was sick as a dog throwing up in the bathroom. And coach said, yeah, 2 other people are sick too, so you're in.
You're the least sick of the 3. Yeah.
So another good year in my first full season. And I actually got invited to big league camp the following year.
Wow.
And so I'm there with, you know, players that you may even remember, like Larry Walker was in the outfield. Marcus Grissom was in the outfield. Yvonne Calderon was in the outfield. And that's what I played, center field. So I'm there with no thoughts that I'm going to become the next big league player of that, you know, starting in that outfield. But I was hoping to at least make a good appearance, go to AAA, and then maybe have a chance next year. But ultimately, I was competing for that 4th and 5th outfield spot with, I don't know if you guys have heard him, but Moises Alou.
I've heard the name, yeah.
That ring a bell?
Yep.
Yeah, he ended up playing in the big leagues for about 20 years. And I think the reason why he got chosen to be on the big league team was because his dad was a coach, Philippe Alou. So I think there was a little favoritism there.
It's always the coach's son.
If only my dad were coaching, I could have been that guy.
Yeah, you could have played 20 years. Yeah.
But yeah, no, he went on to have a great career, as all those guys did. But, you know, as things go, you get good breaks, you can get bad breaks. I ended up playing for 6.5 years total, with my final year being with the Yankees. And about a week before spring training was to start, I ended up tearing my Achilles, which is not good for a speed guy who needs to steal bases. You don't move very well after that. So I had surgery, rehabbed, and then ended up joining the team after about 3 months. And played in AA for my fifth year now with the Norwich Navigators, and then went up and played with the Clippers. And after the season was over, though, it was kind of the family decision that it was probably time to move on, because I was getting up in age and had a bum wheel. And fortunately, though, while I was in rehab, I actually met a Scottsdale sergeant who told me all about police work in Scottsdale.
Was it Mike Snader?
No, it was not.
Okay.
I don't even know that, you know, because Mike Snader was an umpire, as you guys all know. But typically, if he didn't have a C&I dog with him, he wasn't even going to be able to see anything. So that's a little rib.
Yeah, umpire.
I love the umpires. You got to make friends with those guys, because if you don't, then you're getting the bad calls all the time.
Yeah.
So I was always nice to him and joked around with him. So sorry, Mike. But yeah, at the end of that season, I ended up applying for the Scottsdale Police Department from Matt Buesing.
Matt Buesing.
Who had was, I guess, often injured, so he had a good chance of meeting people in the
rehab
center.
Step out of his car and hurt his knee.
So anyways, he
told me. That did happen, by the way. It did happen.
Stop it.
So he told me about the job, and that December after my final season, I applied and was in the academy by that next March.
That's awesome. Matt Buesing, if you're out there, thank you. That was a good late season acquisition for us here at the PD to get Robbie here. So that's good.
Thank you, Matt.
Awesome. So did you, you were married by that time, right? And by the time you applied here, yes or no? Or
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
I actually met my wife in college.
That's the dirt I wanted to get into. Yeah. Right there. I wanted to get into that.
Yeah. Let's see. I guess it was back in 1988. The day is still in question. I think it was April 28th. My wife insists it was April 29th. So
she's right. Yeah. She's right. Yep. Okay.
She's
just
right.
Easier
always
that way.
Right.
You know that.
It's kept me married for 32 years. So, she was an Arizona born girl, but moved to California when she was like 12, and was going to high school, or went to high school at El Camino in the Valley. The team manager who takes care of all the equipment was our equipment guy at UCLA. So my sophomore year, her freshman year, when she's here at ASU, we went on a road trip. And you know how fate happens, where if anything were different, it could have changed the entire outlook of my life. Well, we were playing ASU that weekend, and we didn't do so well that first game. I think we got beat like 20-4. So as Dom's going to be able to tell you, when you get beat like that, there's not much celebration going on. So the plans that they had made, which was to take a bunch of the players to a party, was not going to happen. So when I got back to the hotel after going to dinner with my parents, who traveled with me all the time, they were awesome.
That's great.
Very encouraging, supporting. They were driving me back to the hotel, and as we pull up to the front, I see this team manager, Mark, who's standing with seven beautiful girls. And I'm thinking, well, Mark's not that much of a catch. I might have a chance. I mean, he's a great guy. So I tap my dad on the shoulder, hey, stop the car. Let me out. And then I said, wait, pull up a little bit and then drop me off. So I get out and I go join the conversation. And after talking with all of them, I just fell in love with my wife right then and there.
Awesome.
And we started dating about a week later when she came back home after finals. And we've been together ever since.
That's great.
Wow.
Great story. She knew what she was getting into, the baseball life, the police life, all of that. So.
Yeah, she often tells me that I looked cute in baseball pants, and that's why that's why she wanted to meet me and date me and all that. So,
well, hey, whatever it takes. Great story. That's a great story, and we'll connect that. You know, you kind of leave off when you got into the police department. So we'll pick up that in a moment. But Dom, let's get away from Robbie Katzeroff in the 80s and 90s, and let's get into more maybe some more modern times here in 2000s, 2010 plus. Kind of with your story and your journey to the Scottsdale Police Department through baseball.
So through baseball, quite similar to Rob's story here. I didn't play in the minor leagues as much as Rob did. I was drafted in the 32nd round out of the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, and that was to the Oakland Athletics. Same exact thing, got $1,000 and a pair of white cleats because the A's were the only team that wore white cleats at the time, and still do for the most part. Landing here in Arizona, this is the furthest west I've ever been up until that time. I think Oklahoma was the furthest, and then just in Maryland the rest of my life. Got here, saw the Red Rocks over by Papago Park, and I was like, wow, that's weird.
Never went, seen that before.
And then I went to Sedona, and I was like, wow, this is a whole lot of rocks. This
<there." laughs> is a state full of rocks and cactus. Yeah.
But yeah, being a, like Rob said, being a 32nd rounder as a senior, I didn't have much leverage to bargain with. Like, hey, I want to hold out for my last year, which I was at my last year. So I was either, you know, grab a plane ticket and that $1,000 and then came out here to pursue this dream. I've always wanted to play professional baseball, and then I always wanted to be a cop as well, but baseball is more time sensitive.
Yeah.
And yeah,
you only got a window to do that, short window.
So yeah, I was a pitcher. My first year, same thing as Rob, came out, went to short season. I was here for extended spring training because, like Rob had mentioned, the draft happens in like the first couple weeks of June, and then fly out, and they just send you a plane ticket. They're like, yep, we want you here this date. Pack your stuff. So first thing I did, went to the mall with my best friend, and I got an A's hat.
And I was like, all right. That's awesome.
Like, this is a dream come true.
Yeah.
You didn't know they were going to give you a bunch of them?
At the time, no.
Don't ruin that, Rob.
Look at the elder statesman.
How dare you? Weigh in. You?
Hey, kid, you didn't know you were going to get a bunch of hats? No. Duh.
Don't take that core memory away.
So here we're like all this wonderfulness. I'm like, what a cool memory. Hey, kid, what are you doing? Thanks, Rob. That's a very senior cop thing. Like, you're excited to be on the job as a new cop, and Rob rolls up and like, idiot. Sorry, Dom, for Rob.
These things happen. So I get off the plane, see the Red Rocks, still question what am I doing here. So I get to the spring training facility, which is now off of 64th and McDowell, now owned by the Giants, I want to say. But anyways, get there, put my jersey on. I'm like, wow, this is the real deal. This is pretty darn cool. I get out there to throw my first couple of innings. After my first inning, I come down with a bloody nose, and I get blood all over my freshly nice
Why
clean.
Why was your nose bleeding?
Dry.
Because it's hot here?
Yeah, dry, hot, dry, yeah.
Don't look at me.
Yeah, come on. He was like, he's from Maryland. Like,
this humidity.
It's moist there.
This is a dry
heat. Here, it's like, yeah, your eyes can bleed, your nose can bleed. It's like living in an oven.
Okay, anyways, go ahead.
So I'm out here for extended spring training, actually, for a couple weeks, and then I get shipped off to the New York Penn League, and I played for the Vermont Lake Monsters, which is that photo that Steve pulled up. There, finish out the season there, come back my following spring training, and my scout at the time was like, hey, I think if Dom's going to make it, he's going to make it as a sidearm pitcher. So they dropped me down from the high three-quarter slot that I had to now a sidearm pitcher, which was completely new. Well, not completely new, but relatively new. A lot of fun, but it did. There was a learning curve. So I was a little behind on that, and it took me a few weeks, a couple months to really hone in those skills and excel at that point. Go back out to Vermont to finish that season in short season, and then I get called up to our low A ball team, which was the Beloit Lake Beloit Snappers, going from monsters to turtles.
So. All these cool teams.
Yeah. A lot of cool hats.
It's like the Arizona Hush Puppies.
So I'm in Beloit, and this is a very small town. Like I'm sure Rob could tell you, in every minor league, anywhere there's a minor league team, there's a rundown diner and maybe like a Chinese food restaurant, and that's it.
It's better than like a military base where it's a tattoo shop and a strip club.
Well, there's Allison then again dragging us back to her the tattoo shop. Anyway. Sorry, Dom, for Allison. Sergeant Sempsis, my bad. Please continue.
So I'm in Beloit, Wisconsin, and there are more players on the field than there are spectators in the stands. Wow. So it doesn't really feel like a professional atmosphere. The next jump up was Stockton, California, and that's kind of where, in the A's organization, that's where it feels like pro ball. So that's where you really, you're like, oh.
This is what I want to do.
So... finish out that season in Wisconsin, come back, spring training, and they never told me that they don't pay you in the off season, so that was kind of weird. So I did. I worked at a Sunglass Hut, and I did pitching lessons while living at my parents' house.
Yeah.
So it's nothing like you made it, like, live at home with your parents. Hey, Mom, what's for dinner?
Whatever, that's the best. She can make you all the meals you need.
Can't wait till your girls get to that age. You know, it's like, it's the best. What's Mom going to make tonight?
And then the following year is when I came to spring training with the hopes of, unfortunately, going back to Beloit, Wisconsin, where it's miserable to play in. But I had a chance to make in the high A team, which was in Stockton. There was a few pitchers up at the big league level with the A's that they just ran through their bullpen. And at the time, the A's had the Sacramento River Cats, which was now the Giants' AAA team.
Is that a thing?
The River Cats?
Is a River Cat a thing?
I thought everybody was just going to skip over that. Okay. No one was going to say anything.
But because they're close in proximity, they had brought in some of the Sacramento pitchers up to the big league level to staff them, so to speak, and then Stockton up to Sacramento. So they're like, hey, we're down a few pitchers. You're going to be leaving tomorrow. You're going to be leaving spring training and going over there to Stockton. So I was like, finally, I made it. Where the clubbies actually clean your cleats and do all that stuff.
Wow.
That, you know, you feel like a real big leaguer for. Show up to spring training, have everything packed up. And like, Sacramento didn't use everyone, so you're going to stay here.
Oh.
So a few times where I had an opportunity to move up, and just for whatever reason didn't work out. And then I guess go into the romantic realm of it, I suppose. During my second spring training, that's when I met my wife. So she's from Washington, Seattle. I'm from right outside Washington, D.C. in Maryland. We met, went on a few dates, and then been together since. So.
See all this? It's baseball love.
No, it's amazing how you draw that
I think
that
it was
LL
the
in.
Pants, honestly. I thought. It was the pants in the hopes of a high payout. So.
That's awesome, and now you're both cops. she still have the hopes for the high payout.
The high payout never came.
Well, you know, Dom and I were talking earlier how being a police officer, we've made far more than we ever made playing baseball.
Yeah.
I remember the first season that when I was in Jamestown, I got $850 a month only for the days that we were actually playing games. As soon as that last game ended, I was off the payroll. And it's like, go get a job or go play winter ball somewhere. And, you know, if you have a family or you have a girlfriend and you want to see her because you've been separated for 3 months, it becomes a tough lifestyle. Yeah,
that's a good point. You know, I get this question pretty often is usually about pay. Oh, you guys don't make enough. You give me any more pay. And well, we would certainly all of us say, well, yeah, sure. We're always going to take, you know, more pay. You want to raise our pay. But you can make a great living as a police officer in Scottsdale. And so, when I tell people that, I say, yeah, my senior, you know, by the time you're at 7 years plus, with overtime, I mean, you're making well into more than $100,000 plus. And so, it's better than $850 a month, right?
Way better.
So Dom, you finish out your career, your baseball career. How'd you find us? How'd you get with the Scottsdale Police Department?
So, Sergeant Mike Snyder, actually.
I knew his name was going to come up here at some point.
So he came out to the A's facility during one of the spring trainings and kind of gave us the rundown with like Old Town, stuff like that, how to stay out of trouble, things to look out for. And then he passed out his business card. And I was like, well, you know, at some point, unless I do make it, then I'm going to need another job. So since I've always wanted to be a police officer, then I held onto his card and I gave him a call once I was all done.
Awesome. So. And now the rest is history.
Yeah, now here. I ride a bike.
Yeah, Scottsdale versus like maybe Washington, D.C. or the D.C. area. I would say you definitely chose wisely in that. So, come on, Allison, I'm going to let you talk a little bit now. I mean, you got some good questions because now we're up to the point, right? We're up to the point where, and by the way,
I'm not
a misogynist. I don't let Allison, you know, that's the wrong words. She pretty much does whatever she wants and tells me where to go and what to do, including a dunk tank last weekend for Special Olympics.
But that raised $6,000.
I got dunked like 25 times. But I think we're to that point, like, right? We hit a lot of baseball, but.
So how does it tie into like police work? Like, what have you learned from your careers in baseball that you think helped you survive being a police officer? not only you, but your families too, because were you guys traveling all the time during baseball? Or
yeah, you know, coming back from when you play baseball, you're basically on the road from the time you go out for spring training until the time the season is over. So anywhere from the middle of February all the way until late September. And so if your family's not traveling with you, and they don't pay a whole lot to be able to have your family travel with you,
right.
You probably are doing a lot of time without. So that coupled with the fact that then you get home and you're having to side hustle to make money and still work out so you're ready for the next season, coming over to baseball from baseball to police work was a no-brainer. I actually felt like I was in a stable career for once.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
As opposed to having that feeling of, you're going to be shipped out, which happened several times during my career where I go to the stadium one day and my life is completely turned upside down the next because of being moved to a different team or being released by a team or any other number of factors. It's just so insecure with that career. So coming over to police work, as long as you do your job the way you're supposed to, you have a job. And you know where you're going to be for the most part until shift change. and then you know, you go about your business. So what are the things that translated from baseball to police work? Well, obviously teamwork is one.
Right.
But also the confidence that you get when you're out there performing, you know, again in front of a bunch of people, but you're also competing against other people who want to beat you. You understand the competitiveness. Which I often take with me into police work. Not that I'm trying to, you know, be a better police officer than the guy next to me, but when you look at each individual case that you go on, it's almost like a game that you're playing with the bad guy. And in this game, there is no room for losing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you take that with you, that confidence that you have, and you take that competitive edge that you have, and you go about your business trying to win that case and do the best job possible. Now, I've also learned later in my career that you can talk to people and it's not always, I'm going to make you hurt and lose and all that. You know, so there does come some maturity with it as well. But I think initially just having that competitive feel really served me well with the police department.
I think also just being able to talk to people too. I mean, right now when people come from, like both of you are both two of the hardest working in the department. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty phenomenal.
Are you checking our overtime hours?
Absolutely. Well, Dom, I used to work with him all the time, and he was just telling us, remember?
Dom's a freaking star. Are you kidding me? He's like sitting on panels and going there and getting invited to conferences, and he's just, yeah, so.
And then.
Amazing.
He doesn't say anything.
He's like, yeah, and?
He's like, I know.
Yeah. Please continue.
Go ahead.
I like the praise.
And then just to piggyback off of Rob, growing up my entire athletic career, I've always been taught you play for the team that's on the front of your jersey, not that's on the back of your jersey. So same thing here. Not only are you trying to make a name for yourself, a reputation amongst your peers, but also representing the city well.
Awesome. Snappers.
That was like a total mic drop right there. That's a good one.
That was very motivational.
That was in a positive way, Allison. That sounded like chock full of sarcasm. No. Hey, Dom, that was super motivational. Anyway, Rob, can you continue to speak again?
But seriously, one question. What do you guys do during, like, when you're not playing then? What was your job? Yours was Sunglass Hut.
Sunglass Hut.
What did you do?
A lot of different things. I drove for UPS for several years.
What can Brown do for you? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I delivered packages. I was hustling. I worked for Hinckley and Schmidt Bottled Water, delivering water.
Huh.
I did some baseball camps. And then a couple of years, I actually did go and play winter ball. Like I spent some time in Mexico in Obregon, which I think is the poorest city in Mexico.
Mm.
So outside of the hotel, there wasn't a whole lot other than the Tecate beer that I learned to like.
That's delicious.
Do you look back at, when you look at your career, your baseball career, and then as that you transition into your police career, like, Do you look at, you know, kind of with a little bit more wisdom that you've gained over the years, right? Do you look back and say, I wish I'd have done this, or if I would, you know, or are you pretty pleased with how you're, I know all of us want, especially in your baseball career, you wanted to go, you know, as long as possible, but are you happy about it? Or were there things that you would have changed or messed with a little bit or wish things you wish had done differently? Or are you just pretty content with how things worked out?
You know, if there's one change I were to make, back in my sophomore year of college, well, actually, I'll go back to my freshman year of college. I was an outfielder in high school, and I came into UCLA as an outfielder. But I knew that the second baseman was a senior, and he was going to be leaving. You might know him. His name's Torrey Lovello. So, and he was an outstanding All-American player at UCLA, and so I got to learn from him. And on my sophomore year, I was actually an experiment at second base. And so I started with UCLA at second base and did well, kind of. I definitely hit the ball well, but when it came to fielding, I think the pitchers were like, can we get somebody else? He's made a couple of errors. And so I got punted back out to the outfield. And I don't know what I would have done differently, but somehow if I could have been a better second baseman, I think it would have served me better for when I got to the pro ball, simply because, you know, you look at, like I said, I'm not going to intimidate you with my size.
Yeah.
And so every time I stepped on the field, I had to prove myself to whoever was watching. Nothing was given to me. There was never a time where said, you know, that guy can play, just let him have a chance.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that would be the one change, is just being a better second baseman. Maybe it would have opened more doors.
Cool. Dom, I know you have an interesting story too, especially because, you know, them kind of getting you to go sidearm. What'd you think of that? I mean, did you like that better, or would you see, like, is there anything you would do differently, or?
Aside from being left-handed, that would have been God's gift. If I was left-handed,
being 6'4". I am, and it didn't work out. So,
from a pitcher's standpoint, being left-handed would have worked, but no, it was a lot of fun, and it's. You're put into, like, a special – you're almost, like, in a specialty unit at that point because not a lot of people do it, kind of like Tim Wakefield back then, like a knuckleballer. Not a lot of guys did that.
Yeah.
So you're changing eye levels. You're changing the perspective of where the ball's coming from. So the batters, they come in, and they're like, oh, I don't know if I want – like, they're not comfortable. And pitching's all about disrupting timing. So you do that, and then you change an arm slot. It looks funky, especially when you're 6'4", and you have basically rec specs on, because I had prescription Oakley glasses at the time. So, no, it was great. It was just hard at first.
Yeah.
Because you're already at the professional level, and then you have to do this swap. And you're like, oh, I'm seeing all my buddies progress who are in your draft class. They're a level or two above you, and you're trying to still master this craft, working and grinding each day. It's not frustrating, but it would have been cool to play with those, with the same group of guys. Kind of like here, like when you transition, you go from an R1 squad, and then you go to a specialty unit with some of the same people. You see the same faces, you know how they work, you know, the camaraderie, the fun times. It's nice to keep that all together as you move and progress upward.
You know, Allison alluded to this before, but and both of you being hard workers, and I think she's spot on. And when you talk about all that you did in the competing for positions and performing in front of people, and I like your word, you know, where you're grinding it out, you're learning something new at the professional level. I can't help but attribute that to both your levels of success here in the organization. You talk about like special assignment. Well, you're both in special assignments, mm-hmm. and kind of our go-to people, Rob in particular with residential security surveys lately, up in the foothills. So if you need a foot, if you live north of Cactus and you need a residential security survey done, Officer Rob Katzeroff of the Foothills District is our crime prevention officer. Please reach out to him. 480-312-5000. Anyway, so
he just got two emails.
wait a minute, his phone's ringing right now. But you're both incredibly hard workers, and Dom in the bike unit. You've been in the bike unit for a while, but you know, you grind. You're just hard workers, mm-hmm. and so do you attribute that to? And probably there's some upbringing in there too, but do you attribute that to kind of learning that skill set in baseball?
I would say so. A lot of the times too, kind of like a sidebar, but a lot of the times too, when people come to some of our officers in our unit, they'll ask us like, hey, like what are some good tips and tricks for this? And I say the biggest thing is, I don't really do the best example of it sometimes, but.
Well, I tell them, don't do what I do, but here's what's a good idea.
No, the example I'm trying to give is the your reaction to bad news. So a lot of the times you'll see guys go up to big league camp. They spend the entire big league camp with them, and then at the end of the season they start kicking people down. Then you know who those people are because they come back in the locker room, they'll throw their glove,
yeah,
and kind of throw a fit. And I always say, like, you know, people are watching that.
Yes.
Like, not only that is it discomforting for, like, the newer guys, but there's always eyes on you. So if you do that, and then the next time your name could have the potential to be called, like, now we're going to skip on that guy.
Yeah.
So kind of like with me, I tested for the DV unit, got fourth on that list out of four. I was like, well, what did I do wrong, or what didn't I do to be the number one spot? So it's kind of like a self-reflection moment, but that's how
transition
to this.
And yes, 100%. So many things. There is such a translation to law enforcement and law enforcement career. Exactly what you said. There are times when people will test, you know, over the span of my career and at various ranks in the organization, people have come to me and said, hey, I want to talk about, I'm going to put in for XYZ unit, right? Or this promotion. And we talk about that, and you give what you hope are great mentoring tips for them to do well in a process. And then they don't. Everybody's watching, but especially the people who are making the decision of who's going to come to that unit next. And maybe it was, you know, Dom's just not there yet for this particular spot, but let's see how he handles this. How do you handle, you know, bad news? And both of you, you had your share of bad news in professional baseball because you go different places, Rob, you get sent to a different team or whatever. And so that happens here. I can't tell you how many times that's happened in my career where somebody didn't get a spot and then they lost their mind. And it went throughout the organization, like, man, so-and-so took that really bad and is very vocal about it. And this is BS. And so-and-so got the job because of who they know, you know, who they knew, and they're done. Now you guaranteed yourself not to get that spot again. And so that's so good. None of us in this room, none of us in our police career, you guys in your baseball careers, nobody's 100% successful. Nobody gets every job they put in for. Nobody gets the every promotion. It's just, that's just not the way it works. It's not how life works. So it's what a great, I think you just hit the nail on the head, not just for baseball, but in this organization, any organization as well, where you want to do well, you want to succeed. You're just not going to get everything. It's how do you respond to that moment in time of a failure and being introspective. And I tell people all the time, hey, if you didn't get what you want, let your ego chew your ear for about 10 minutes and complain all you want. Like, man, I got railroaded. I'm the best person for this job. It's so-and-so. Like, in the quiet of your own, you know, home, let your ego just go for 10 minutes and then do exactly what you just said. Awesome. Which is, okay, what do I need to learn from this? Why am, you know, what do I need to do to be, you know, more successful candidate the next time? How can I be better? If you're introspective and it's all about what can I do to be better instead of it's everybody else's fault but mine. And we see that, Allison and I talk about this all the time in society, right? Where everybody's like calling, hey, my kid got arrested by you. Oh, yes. How old is your kid? 32. Okay. Yep. Can you tell me? But yeah, I don't like the way the officer treated him. Were you there? Nope. He told me. In society, it's everybody else's fault. To succeed, it's exactly what the both of you have been talking about. It's hard work. It's being introspective. It's recognizing you don't get everything. And then it's what can I do to be better? And I just, yeah, killed that on that. That's life. So awesome job.
I feel like those were all like very inspiring statements from you, Dom. I've never heard you talk like that before. It's weird to me.
We're used to that stuff from Rob, but you know, like,
yeah,
it's,
we
know,
like, we get some, he's good, very distinguished.
Oh, Rob, I'm pretty sure that's an AR 333. That's a hostile work environment because, okay, every time Allison tries to show me something on her phone, Chief, you got to look at this news report, blah, blah, blah. And I go to put my glass on. She's like, oh God, got to put your old man glasses on. So now when she says you're distinguished and, you're distinguished, Robin. Dom, that was so awesome. Like, that's that is just like, ageism at its finest.
Chief, first of all, it was like,
here we go. First of all,
let's get to our good questions.
Rob does. He does like that. The gray is very distinguishing.
No, but he's very well spoken, and Dom is usually fun of full of jokes and like, you know, laughing at everybody. And now he's very
right. You know why? He's over 30. Hello, and like he's getting into his like real wisdom, right? And he's applying his baseball career to his police career, and then yes. You know, like I mean, he's given dad nuggets. You know, Rob's been dispensing dad nuggets for like 25 years.
And for 170 home inspections.
Has it been 30 years?
31 years.
Yeah.
For his kids? 32 yeah. In May.
I know. He and I are the same. Like my 34, 31, and 29. Yeah, Allison, we know.
Dom.
You got like three-year-olds or something like that.
He has like a baby.
But Dom is in his 30s, Allison. You're not.
How dare you?
Well, this was fun.
Thank you to everyone who's tuned in today. Your support means the world to us, and we're thrilled to have you as a part of the Shop Talk community. To stay in the loop with all things safety and to ensure your home is as secure as it can be, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at ScottsdalePD. Officer Katzeroff has been sharing some invaluable tips on how to keep your home safe from potential threats. Make sure to check those out and keep your loved ones and your property protected. As we keep the ball rolling in round third heading for home plate in today's episode, it's time to dive into For Reals questions.
So this is the part where Allison loves to throw out some interesting questions. I never know what they are. You guys don't know what they are. So let's see what her that mind comes up with. It's usually pretty fascinating.
These aren't actually, Chief. Okay. I talked about this with you guys earlier. You're the only one that doesn't know about this one. Mm-hmm. What would you name your own baseball team, and where would it be? And you can't use what you've already said, Dom.
That's all I got.
Yeah, well, tough.
Well, my original one was the Wilmington Wombats in North Carolina, North Carolina.
All of the team names that you've listed off so far, the Snappers, the Flying Fish, I don't even know those were teams.
You got to bring the fans in with a cool mascot. Marketing 101.
I'm thinking about my wife in this, that I would have a team in Aruba, and we would call it the Aruba Aristocats.
Oh, I like that one. That one's a good one.
Kind of a little bit expensive on the travel costs for the other minor league teams coming, but.
I'd go with the Alpine Hellcats. Okay, maybe that was too aggressive. My place is an Alpine, and I was trying to think. I'm like, what sounds really cool? Well, Scottsdale took the artichokes, so I can't do that one.
Is that really an artichoke as a mascot?
Yeah, the Scottsdale Community College are the artichokes.
All right, that's fantastic. Learn
something every day.
Yeah,
a little bit of trivia.
No big deal.
Go with the next one, or
okay, Dom, you have to come up with something.
Dom, what's yours?
What?
It's a knockout. The Wilmington Wombats.
Favorite baseball movie?
For the Love of the Game.
I love that movie. Kevin Costner. My favorite. Yeah.
Plus a pitcher movie, right?
Pitcher.
Baseball.
Favorite baseball movie.
Why we're here. Sandlot's good.
Sandlot is awesome.
Great, right, but yeah.
You're killing
so many
me, Smalls.
Other inspirational yeah,
you did,
movies.
You did take mine. Yeah. Sandlot was so fantastic. Good. But I will so say good. The other one would be The Natural. Yeah. Robert Redford,
yeah.
Yeah.
Bull Durham.
Yeah, Bull Durham's a good one.
Yeah.
Major League.
Oh my. Got wild thing.
Hats for Bats. That's a good movie.
Favorite snacks at a baseball game. And what's the weirdest snack you've seen at a baseball game?
Well, how do you get past the peanuts? I mean, that's a classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now that I've been working in the Charles Lodge a few times, I'd have to say the sliders that we had, and then Mission brought in some great burritos, and then some guys even did some pulled pork who were just selling their grills.
That's so
Scottsdale.
If I'm gonna, I'm gonna say you need to go to the Charo's Lodge if you want to have good baseball snacks. Yeah.
I will tell you, and I think I told you this, that my brother's a season ticket holder to the Seattle Mariners. He lives in Seattle, and he's a member of the press club, which is they took one level of the press box. And they made it an exclusive club that you can pay some colossally exorbitant amount of money, and you go in there, and it's the seats are amazing. Like, you can order stuff right up at your seat, but it's there's a carving station and there's a dessert bar. And like, if, yeah, I'm going there in July again. It's amazing. But the amount of food in there, like for regular people like me, was always dug the nachos and whatever fake cheese that was in the little cup.
Yeah,
that
spray cheese.
Yeah, that was always one of my favorites.
Licorice and like popcorn and beer. That's it.
Hot dogs are good, but in the minor leagues, that's what they fed you. Like, all right, you guys' food is going to be the rest of the concession.
Okay, last one. What is a harder sport, baseball or softball? You guys don't have to stay silent for this.
We did see Albert Pujols and Jenny Finch go in their little battle.
Right.
So Albert Pujols did strike out. Played slow pitch softball.
That is
the field is smaller. The baseline the baseline's smaller.
You know, I would say baseball.
The ball's bigger. Yeah. I don't know. You know how this. My daughter played club softball from the time she was 8 till she was 18. So I spent my life in softball. She was a pitcher.
Okay, fine. I'm going to switch it up.
Gosh,
I'm
going to
go with the politically correct answer and say they're both difficult sports.
Yes,
because what you're looking
at. This is not a politically correct podcast.
Here's the thing. You're looking at the reaction time. And in baseball, you know, it's 60 feet, 6 inches. And in softball, I think it's like 45 feet.
Yeah.
But obviously, they throw harder in baseball than they do in softball. But the ball is still arriving at home plate at about the same time. You only have a fraction of a second to make the adjustment, decide if you're going to swing or not, and then to be able to put the bat on the ball to hit it nicely. So, you know, both sports are tough.
You took all the fun out of this question.
Yeah, sorry. That's a dad answer.
I know.
Sorry.
Thanks,
Grandpa.
Whoa.
Oh, wait a minute. That's me.
Just because I'm a grandpa doesn't mean you get to call me.
me too.
Okay. What's a harder sport?
Me too.
Wrestling or golf?
Ooh.
Two completely different sports.
Dom, you golf, right? Rob, do you golf too?
Yeah. I golf a little bit.
I dabble.
Chief, you wrestle, right?
You know what? I'm just that stumped me because I had so many answers for wrestling. No, honey, I'm not going to say any of them. And honey, I mean my wife, not Allison. For those of you who are like, I can't believe him. He's a misogynist.
How dare
he
you?
Called out. No, my wife is one of my 10 listeners.
And James, he likes everything.
Happy birthday, James. You're almost 50, and Allison reminds us of that pretty regularly.
Okay, well, you guys ruined my question.
Baseball?
Golf or wrestling?
Golf or wrestling?
They're both so technical. There's a lot of technicality in both wrestling and golf, but.
I'm going to say that golf is harder.
Golf is pretty hard.
With wrestling, you have, even though it's technical, it's very physical, much like football. You know, you can have really good athletes in football who cannot play a different sport, such as baseball or golf. And the difficulty in golf, I think, is in you're competing against just yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to get really good at the game, to be on the level that those guys on the PGA Tour and some of the LIV Tour guys, I don't know if that gets me in trouble, but... to be able to play the game at their level takes a lot of dedication. And I know after trying to have mastered the game of golf since I left baseball, and I'm still not anywhere close. So you figure just the technicality or just learning, you know, all that there is to it. And plus, there's a lot of math involved in golf.
Yeah. Count me out.
I would agree. I'm no mathematician, but... I consider myself decent at golf. And then I wrestle every weekend in Old Town. So,
Rob, Dom, thanks so much. We always, Allison and I, Steve, always want to have a great time. And you guys, great stories, great personal history. I mean, some really cool stuff that I always walk away from these. I'm like, man, what great experiences, right? And then you bring that into policing and all that you've brought into policing and all that you do for Scottsdale PD. So thanks for being here. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Yep,
yeah,
you bet.
Absolutely. It was fun.
To our listeners out there, thanks for hanging with us again in this another great episode of Shop Talk. Do me a favor, as always, a lot of craziness going out there. It's an election year, and so we're seeing a lot of... I don't know. A lot of divisiveness, a lot of fisticuffs, a lot of problems, a lot of issues. Just remember that every day offers each of us the opportunity to be more in the service of each other. Take care of one another. Have a little patience. Please go easy on the road rage. Use your turn signal. I had that one. Somebody called me like, nobody uses their turn signal. Yeah, I know. So do great things. Treat each other well. And we'll see you next month.
Friends, as we close the books on episode 30 of Shop Talk, I'm reminded of the countless stories that weave through the fabric of our community, much like the innings of a great ball game. If there's a thought you'd like to share, a whisper of wisdom for Chief Walther, or perhaps a suggestion for a future guest, maybe even yourself stepping up to the plate, well, we're all ears. Reach out to us at Scottsdale PD across all social platforms. In the grand tapestry of life and law enforcement, every voice adds a unique thread. Until next time, keep the conversation alive and remember, in the great game of life, it's not just about making it home safe. It's about making home a safe place for all. G'day, folks.